Welcome to the Soulful Podcast. I am your host, Megan Harmony, a champion at overcoming the tough stuff and enjoying life while rising above it. Soulful living means getting to a place of ease and comfort, no matter what's happening around you. It is waking up excited about what adventures you will go on. It's connecting to the power within you as your source of strength, grace, and security. It's being uncomfortable during growth spurts and leaning into the stretch. Each week, I will share with you about my journey and the experiences I have had. I'll offer you hope and inspiration that it is possible to live a full life, even when the you-know-what is hitting the fan. I believe that love is a language we can all understand, and I want to inspire you to trust and believe in yourself. Your soul is hungry for more. Lean in to get soul full. Good morning, family and friends. I want to take a minute to remind you that my Soulful Group Program enrollment is open currently. So if you're interested in that, check out my Facebook or Instagram page. Last week on the podcast, we covered session one of the AA Beginners Meetings. So this week, we're going to look at session two. For the purposes of this meeting, the book that it's come out of is Back to Basics by Wally P. And it's what the beginners meetings used to be like when AA first started. For the purpose of this podcast, if you're not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, just substitute the words AA for whatever fellowship you're a part of. Substitute alcoholism and alcohol for whatever your substance is, or if you're not an addict or an alcoholic, whatever your problem is, because these steps can be applied to any problem in any life and things will get better. I'm also trying something different while recording this podcast and running healing in the background. So if you notice any major shifts afterwards, please send me a private message on social media and let me know. So let's get started. Session number two. Steps 2, 3, and 4. We're about to take our second journey back to the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, back to the 4 1-hour beginners meetings of the mid-1940s. During this session, we will complete the surrender process we started last week. In addition, we will learn how to identify the shortcomings that have prevented us from establishing an intimate, two-way relationship with the God of our understanding. Welcome to session number 2 of the Alcoholics Anonymous Beginners Meetings. Together we are taking the 12 steps based on the directions found in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the personal experiences of our AA pioneers. I am a member of a 12-step fellowship and my name is Megan. I am grateful that I am able to lead these sessions. This is one way I can be of service to others and at the same time, grow in the fellowship of the Spirit. Our goal is to recover from the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body known as alcoholism. And recover we will. The August 1946 issue of the AA Grapevine contains an article titled, Minneapolis Record Indicates That 75% Are Successful in AA. This article demonstrates the importance of the beginners meetings. In Minneapolis, about half of those who stayed on the program for 3 months, recovered from alcoholism. Almost 3/4 of those who remained involved for 6 months never drank again. In other areas of the country where beginners' meetings are an integral part of the recovery process, we are seeing similar results. We remain involved in the beginners' meetings by taking the 12 steps, helping others through the steps, and if possible, leading these sessions. If you participate in the beginners' meetings long enough, you will experience the miracle and you will recover from alcoholism. During this session, we'll take steps 2 and 3 and establish guidelines for taking the 4th step. During the next week, each newcomer is to share his or her inventory with another person or persons. Older members have told us that the only way to understand the Big Book is to try to explain it to someone else. They were right. We didn't realize how much we could still learn about our textbook for recovery until we started leading these meetings. So I want to thank you for providing me with the opportunity to grow in understanding and effectiveness by once again taking the 12 steps along with you. As I have discovered right here in these beginners meetings, each time I take the steps, I grow closer to the one who has all power. Before we begin, we must make sure that the newcomers have someone at this meeting to help them with the steps. In order for the process to work, sponsors or sharing partners need to accompany the newcomers through these sessions. So if you're listening to this podcast, you need to find somebody that can do this alongside you. As explained last session, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous contains step-by-step directions on how to recover from alcoholism by finding and relying upon a power greater than ourselves. This power will remove our obsession to drink and lead us to a new freedom and a new happiness. Let's start with a brief review of what we have learned so far. In the third paragraph on page 64 of the Big Book, we find an excellent overview of the recovery process. Starting in the middle of the third line, the authors write, "For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. This is our goal, to overcome the spiritual malady that has separated us from the God of our understanding and doomed us, until now, to the living hell of alcoholism. How do we overcome this malady? The Big Book authors tell us we need to experience a spiritual awakening, which Dr. Silkworth defines as a psychic change. Dr. Silkworth describes the effect of this change on the alcoholic in the first paragraph on Roman numeral page 29. There he states, "On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules." What are these simple rules? They are trust in God, clean house, and help others. If we follow these guidelines, we will receive the ultimate reward, a spiritual awakening. Last week, we started on our journey to this spiritual awakening by taking step one. We conceded to our innermost selves we are powerless over alcohol. That is, we are alcoholics. Will those who have taken step one, either at the conclusion of last week's beginner meetings or during the week with their sponsor or sharing partner, please say, "Me." Congratulations. I commend you for admitting you have a problem. As the Big Book says, this is the first step in recovery. Your admission is a major accomplishment since most alcoholics live in total denial they have a progressive and fatal illness. We are now ready to proceed. Step 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Now that we have admitted we are alcoholics, let's look at what else we have to do in order to recover. In the fourth paragraph on page 44, we learn, "If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly." What is it going to take for us to find this power? The answer is in the back of the Big Book with Appendix 2. Starting with the second paragraph on page 568, we find, "Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. But these are indispensable." The Big Book authors maintain that it is our arrogance and short-sightedness that keep us in the dark and block us from the sunlight of the spirit. Bill W., our New York City co-founder, had a great deal of difficulty accepting a spiritual solution to his alcoholism. In his story, he explains how he came to believe. In late November 1934, Ebbie T. visits Bill at his Brooklyn, New York home. It is during this visit that Bill first learns about the concept of God as you understand God. As we mentioned last week, Ebbie is one of Bill's high school friends and a former drinking companion. Ebbie has been sober for several months. He tells Bill his life has been transformed as a result of practicing the four spiritual activities of surrender, sharing, restitution, and guidance. Bill is shocked when Ebbie starts talking about God. However, he does listen because he realizes Ebbie's life has truly changed. Ebbie is sober for the first time in many years. Let's pick up the story in the first paragraph on page 12. Despite the living example of my friend, there remained in me the vestiges of my old prejudice. The word God still aroused a certain antipathy. When the thought was expressed that there might be a God personal to me, this feeling was intensified. I didn't like the idea. I could go for such conceptions as creative intelligence, universal mind, or spirit of nature, but I resisted the thought of a Tsar of the heavens, however loving his sway might be. I have since talked with scores of men who felt the same way. Then Ebbie presents Bill with a revolutionary proposition. My friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea. He said, "Why don't you choose your own conception of God?" That statement hit me hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. I saw that growth could start from that point. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. Now let's look at how the Big Book authors describe this power greater than ourselves. In the middle of page 46, they ask us to set aside any contempt we may have for spiritual principles and consider our own conception of this power. If we do, we will be in a much better position to understand the AA solution for the alcohol problem. Starting with the third line in the first paragraph, they write, "We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God." The Big Book authors clearly state that it is impossible to define God. We have to stop trying to comprehend this power with our mind and start accepting this power with our heart. In the first paragraph on page 47, they explain the concept of God as you understand God. "When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to effect our first conscious relation with God as we understood him. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth. But if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So, we used our own conception, however limited it was. Sometimes we have to take our lives right to the brink of disaster and look death squarely in the eye before we are willing to acknowledge the presence of God. But there is hope, even for the most stubborn of us." Starting with the seventh line from the top of page 48, the Big Book authors maintain that, eventually, most of us become teachable. Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. Sometimes this was a tedious process. We hope no one else will be prejudiced for as long as some of us were. In the third paragraph on page 52, the authors make a powerful case for the existence of God. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. Once again, we need to make a decision. We have to decide whether or not we believe in a power greater than human power, a spirit of the universe, a God of our understanding. In the second paragraph on page 53, the Big Book authors write, "When we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? Now it's time to choose. Are we willing to concede that there is a power greater than ourselves? If we are, we're ready to take the second step." In the second paragraph on page 47, we find the directions. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe, or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Let's see who is ready to proceed. Will those who have taken step one please raise your hand? This is the second step question. Do you now believe, or are you even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than yourself? Please answer yes or no. Thank you. According to the Big Book authors, those who answered yes to this question have taken step two. Now let's move on to the third step. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. This step begins with the third paragraph on page 60. How do we know that? Well, in this case, the Big Book authors tell us, being convinced we were at step three. Convinced of what? If we have taken the second step, we believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. But even though we may believe that the power of God is the answer, this doesn't necessarily mean we are willing to accept this solution. In order to recover from alcoholism, we must make a decision to put this power to work in our lives. On pages 62 and 63, the Big Book authors show us how to become God-directed. But first, they disclose how operating on self-will keeps us separated from this inner resource. In the fourth paragraph on page 60, they explain that when we live on self-will, we are like actors trying to control every detail of the play. The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. Does this sound familiar? At one time or another, haven't we all tried to convince those around us they would be much better off if they just did things our way? Attempting to control others is one of the characteristics of selfishness. In the first paragraph on page 62, the authors declare that it is this selfish self-centeredness that gets us into trouble. We need to take responsibility for our selfishness and ask God to remove this shortcoming from our lives. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Then, in the third paragraph on page 62, the authors make clear what happens once we rid ourselves of this selfishness. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Now we know our plans in God's universe. Contrary to what we may have thought in the past, the whole world does not revolve around us. Realizing there is a power greater than ourselves is the essence of God consciousness. As we become aware of the realm of the Spirit, our lives change. Starting with the fifth line from the top of page 63, the authors explain this awareness. Established on such a footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. We have been delivered from the gates of hell and have come back to tell what it was like. It isn't a pretty picture. We will never have to relive the horrors of the past if we are willing to remain in the sunlight of the Spirit. It is decision time once again. The Big Book authors tell us we are now ready to take the third step. In the third paragraph on page 63, they provide us with the directions. We found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person, such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor. But it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. This was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. We are so fortunate that in the years since the Big Book was written, the fellowship has grown to where very few, if any, newcomers have to take the third step alone. We're here to take this monumental step with you right now. Although they say the wording is optional, the authors do provide us with a prayer we can use to take the third step. The prayer is in the middle of page 63. Starting with the second line in the second paragraph, it reads, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We would like those who are ready to take the third step to read the prayer along with me. Let's read the third step prayer together. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Well done. According to the Big Book authors, we have taken step three. Even though we've spent a considerable amount of time on the first three steps, we have only made a series of decisions. Now we need to take some specific actions that will result in the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. In the fourth paragraph on page 63, the Big Book authors tell us what we need to do now, and now that we've made our decision to proceed. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Please note the authors say at once. They instruct us to take the fourth step immediately after the third step prayer. We must overcome those things that have prevented us from tapping into the spiritual solution to our problem. So, we are now going to establish a direct line of communication with the God of our understanding by eliminating those manifestations of self that have kept us in the depths of loneliness and despair. The Big Book authors disclose that liquor is only a symptom of our problem. Sure, alcohol has cut us off from God, but once we stop drinking, we're still separated from the one who has all power because of our shortcomings. Now it is time to look at these causes and conditions by taking an inventory. The Big Book authors start by comparing a personal inventory to a business inventory. In the first paragraph on page 64, they write, "Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. So we are going to conduct the equivalent of a commercial inventory on our lives. This implies we are going to look at our assets and liabilities. That's what a commercial inventory is all about. It's an examination of what is working and what is not working in our lives. It allows us to accentuate the positive and eliminate the negative." Then, in the second paragraph on page 64, the authors clearly explain what we need to do in order to conduct a fourth step inventory. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Before we get into the details on how to take this step, we want to emphasize a few things. First, there is no right or wrong way to conduct a four-step inventory. Various assets and liabilities checklists are in use today. You can use any one of them. Second, the assets and liabilities checklist described on page 64 precedes the three-column inventory shown on page 65, because this commercial inventory comes first. We assume the Big Book authors are asking us to utilize this simple checklist before attempting the much more difficult example on the following page. Third, Dr. Bob, our Akron, Ohio co-founder, has been using an assets and liabilities checklist for many years. Dr. Bob believes that, initially, newcomers should be taken through a simplified version of the steps. Later, they can work the program in more detail. Dr. Bob takes newcomers through the steps as quickly as possible. In many instances, he completes the process during the person's 3 to 5 day stay in St. Thomas Hospital in Akron, Ohio. Thousands of alcoholics have recovered by following Dr. Bob's "keep it simple" approach. The Big Book authors also urge us to take the steps quickly. We must discover the truth about the stock in trade in order to remove those behaviors that have cut us off from the sunlight of the Spirit. In the third paragraph on page 65, they provide us with some of the details. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. Please note that the authors ask us to be thorough, and in the very next sentence, they tell us what to do when we are finished. Since this is all in one paragraph, we assume they are asking us to complete this inventory in one sitting. Keep in mind, this is only a suggestion. You can spend as much time on this inventory as you wish, just as long as you and your sponsor or sharing partner complete it before the next session. Now let's look at what we put on paper. From pages 64 to 71, the authors present us with a list of liabilities we need to eliminate and assets we need to accentuate. The liabilities they mention are resentment, fear, selfishness, dishonesty, inconsideration, jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness. For clarity, we have substituted false pride for inconsideration, envy for suspicion, and laziness for bitterness. These liabilities, along with their corresponding assets, are also mentioned in the June 1946 issue of the AA Grapevine. You can use either the original or the modified Big Book liabilities list as guide for your four-step inventory. We're now going to define these shortcomings in a way that hopefully will provide a clearer understanding of their meaning. Let's start with resentment, which is the consequence of being angry or bitter towards someone for an extended period of time over some real or imagined insult. It is a hostile or indignant attitude in response to an alleged affront or personal injury. Fear is being afraid of losing something we have or not getting something we want. It manifests itself in many ways, such as phobia, terror, panic, anxiety, and worry. Selfishness is concern only for ourselves, our own welfare or pleasure, without regard for or at the expense of others. Dishonesty involves theft or deception. It includes taking things that don't belong to us, cheating people out of what is rightfully theirs, and lying to or withholding the truth from others. False pride is either feeling better than or less than someone else. Feelings of superiority include prejudice about race, education, or religious beliefs, and sarcasm, putting someone else down to make us feel better about ourselves. Feelings of inferiority include self-pity, which is excessive concern about our own troubles, and low self-esteem, the lack of self-worth or self-respect. Jealousy has to do with people, being suspicious of another's motives or doubting the faithfulness of a friend. Envy has to do with things, wanting someone else's possessions. Laziness means lacking the will or the desire to work. Procrastination, which is postponing or delaying an assigned job or task, is a form of laziness. Now we know what to inventory. Next, we need to decide who does the writing. For guidance on this subject, let's look to our New York City co-founder, Bill W. On page 13, Bill describes the inventory process he went through in one day. Starting with the fifth line in the second paragraph, Bill states, "I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away, root and branch." Bill doesn't say, "I ruthlessly wrote down my sins." All he does is acknowledge that he has some shortcomings. In the third paragraph on page 13, Bill discusses his shortcomings with his sharing partner. "My schoolmate visited me, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. We made a list of people I had hurt and toward whom I felt resentment." Here again, Bill doesn't say, "My schoolmate visited me and I read him my inventory." He also doesn't say, "I made a list of people." Rather, Bill writes, "We made a list of people." So together, Bill and Ebby made an amends list. Let's think about this for a minute. Bill is in Towns Hospital in December 1934, being withdrawn from alcohol for the fourth time. He is suffering from delirium tremens and is a very sick man. Ebby has been sober for several months. Who do you think did the writing? It wasn't Bill. We are now going to look at the assets and liabilities checklist in more detail. In the third paragraph on page 64, the Big Book authors ask us to examine our resentments. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. In the first paragraph on page 66, the authors emphasize that our resentments keep us separated from the power greater than ourselves. We must eliminate them if we are to have a spiritual awakening. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile, but with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. Then, in the second paragraph on page 67, the authors instruct us to look at our part in each situation to see if we need to make amends. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. Let's look at the third sentence again. It reads, "Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened?" These shortcomings are based on self-will. In addition, they are the opposites of the four standards of honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love, which is used as a test for God's will. Early on, Bill W., Dr. Bob, and other AA pioneers learned to test everything they thought, said, or did. Now they are asking us to do the same thing, test our actions. We need to know which path we're on. Are we living in the solution and walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe? Or are we living in the problem and sinking deeper and deeper into that bitter morass of self-pity? It is our selfish self-centeredness that keeps us blocked from the one who has all power and prevents us from finding the spiritual solution to our difficulties. We can use either the AA test for self-will or the four standards as a test for God's will to determine if we need to make amends. Test for self-will: selfish, selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, frightened. Test for God's will: unselfishness, honesty, purity, love. Concerning our resentments, the Big Book authors provide us with specific instructions on what to do. We must get beyond them if we expect to live long or happily in this world. In the third paragraph on page 66, the authors explain that when we hold on to grudges, we are actually allowing others to control our lives. We turned back to our list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. If we don't deal with our resentments, the future will just be a repeat of the past. Every time we are reminded of an old hurt, the old pain returns and we feel it again and again. In the past, we may have drank to numb this pain, but now we are going to take actions to eliminate this pain. The first thing we do is talk about our resentments with our sponsor or sharing partner. Healing starts with sharing the hurt, but the healing is not complete until we forgive those who have offended us. We overcome resentments with forgiveness. Therefore, forgiveness is the asset that corresponds to the liability of resentment. We must change our attitude about the experience. We do this by seeing the source of our pain in a new light. We see the person as a sick individual who needs our prayers, not our anger. Whether it is a person who is still in our lives, someone who has passed on, someone we may never see again, or ourselves, the process is the same. Starting with the first line on page 67, the Big Book authors write, "Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too." We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Next, the authors ask us to look at our fears. In the first paragraph on page 68, they write, "We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem, or any other. If we have faith that God will keep us safe and protected, we will receive the strength and direction to overcome all of our fears. We overcome fear with faith. Therefore, according to the Big Book authors, faith is the asset that corresponds to the liability of fear." In the second and third paragraphs on page 68, they inform us that we will lose our fears if we trust our Creator. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us, and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate, through us, what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. In the first paragraph on page 69, the authors mention six additional shortcomings we need to address. They also ask us to make a list of those we have harmed. This will become our amends list, the people to whom we need to make restitution. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. According to the Big Book authors, the additional shortcomings we inventory are selfishness, dishonesty, inconsideration, jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness. So much for the liability side of the ledger. Now what about the assets? The Big Book authors list assets throughout chapter 5. We've already presented passages that refer to the assets of forgiveness and faith, which are the opposites of resentment and fear. Additional assets listed in the Big Book and the June 1946 issue of the AA Grapevine are unselfishness, honesty, humility, trust, contentment, and action. We have now looked at both sides of the ledger. Our inventory consists of a list of liabilities to watch for and assets to strive for. We have completed our presentation of the fourth step, but before we end this session, we need to consider one more detail: the person or persons with whom we share our inventory. Step 5 reads, admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. According to the Big Book authors, we must discuss our problems and deficiencies with at least one other person. This individual can be the member of AA who is helping you through these sessions, but it doesn't have to be. The Big Book authors provide us with other options. Starting with the fourth paragraph on page 73, they give us directions on how to choose the person or persons with whom we share our inventory. Our sponsor or sharing partner may assist us in putting our checklist together, but we may feel more comfortable sharing the intimate details with a third party. The Big Book authors provide us with guidelines regarding the individual or individuals with whom we review our shortcomings. We must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happily in this world. Rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom to take this intimate and confidential step. Those of us belonging to a religious denomination which requires confession must, and of course, will want to go to the properly appointed authority whose duty it is to receive it. Though we have no religious connection, we may still do well to talk with someone ordained by an established religion. If we cannot or would rather not do this, we search our acquaintance for a close-mouthed, understanding friend. Perhaps our doctor or psychologist will be the person. Therefore, we can discuss our inventory with any number of people. For those who are still uncertain about who to share your checklist with, have your sponsor or sharing partner help you decide. So we've explained what needs to be inventoried, who does the writing, and the person or persons with whom we share our checklist. Now we are going to provide you with an example to illustrate the inventory process. We have a one-page checklist to use. It has the liabilities on the left side and the assets on the right side of the sheet, which is the same format used in June 1946 issue of the AA Grapevine. All we have to do is add vertical lines so we can list people, institutions, and principles across the top of the page. In this example, the sponsor or sharing partner does the writing. The first thing he or she does is fold the checklist so the assets are hidden from view. Then the sponsor or sharing partner starts asking the newcomer about his or her resentments. As the newcomer talks about his or her grudge list, the sponsor or sharing partner puts the names at the top of the sheet. Keep in mind that it is not necessary to list every resentment the newcomer has ever had in order for the inventory to be thorough. The objective is to get to causes and conditions and get rid of them promptly and without regret. Sometimes it takes only a few incidents to make clear that resentment has been blocking the newcomer from an intimate two-way relationship with the one who has all power. Besides, it is more productive to take a few resentments through the entire inventory and restitution process than to list so many resentments that the newcomer becomes overwhelmed. It is the pain associated with the fact-finding and fact-facing process that must be relieved as quickly as possible. Once the newcomer develops confidence and conviction that this course of action will reduce the terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair associated with living on self-will, he or she will be much more inclined to doing additional inventory work in the near future. Next, the sponsor or sharing partner asks the newcomer to describe the reasons why he or she is angry and to look at his or her part in each situation. If they both agree that the newcomer needs to make an amends, the sponsor puts a mark or an X, checkmark, circle, etc. in the box to the right of resentment under the name of the individual or organization the newcomer is talking about. After the sponsor or sharing partner has compiled the resentment list, he or she moves on to the fear inventory by asking, who or what are you afraid of right now? Let's start with those items for which there is no resentment. After noting any fears at the top of the sheet, The sponsor or sharing partner asks, let's revisit your resentment list. Are there any situations where there is both fear and resentment? Then the newcomer describes the events surrounding each fearful episode. Once again, the sponsor or sharing partner asks the newcomer to look at his or her part in each situation. If they both agree that the newcomer needs to make an amends, the sponsor puts a mark in the box to the right of fear under the name of the individual or organization the newcomer is afraid of. After compiling the resentment and fear checklist, the sponsor or sharing partner asks the newcomer to consider the remaining items on the liability side of the sheet. He or she asks, towards whom have you been selfish? Where have you been dishonest? What about false pride, feeling better than or less than someone else? Are you jealous of any relationship? Do you envy anyone's possessions? Where have you been lazy? As each incident comes up, the sponsor or sharing partner adds the name to the top of the sheet, and if an amend is agreed upon, he or she puts marks in the appropriate boxes. After completing the liability side of the checklist, the sponsor or sharing partner unfolds the sheet so that together they can look at the assets side of the ledger. The assets opposite the liabilities with the least marks are the positive characteristics that the newcomer already has. These assets opposite the liabilities with the most marks are the qualities that will be strengthened as the newcomer makes the necessary amends. In our example, the sponsor or sharing partner and the newcomer have put together a list with only a few marks to the right of dishonesty, jealousy, envy, and laziness, and numerous marks to the right of resentment, fear, selfishness, and false pride. The sponsor or sharing partner summarizes the session by saying, this inventory shows that, for the most part, you are an honest, trusting, contented, and hardworking person. In addition, you will become more forgiving, loving, unselfish, and humble as you make amends for your resentments, fears, selfishness, and false pride. We look at assets as well as liabilities because many of us have lost much of our self-esteem and self-worth as the result of our alcoholism. Even though we've done some very foolish and destructive things while drinking, we will never have to repeat these actions, provided we are willing to admit our faults and correct them. If we are genuinely sorry, God has already forgiven us. Now it is time to forgive ourselves. The Big Book authors tell us this on page 70. Starting with the fourth line in the first paragraph, they write, if we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and will have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. So it is time to make a searching and fearless moral inventory. Time to clean up the wreckage of the past so we can experience the miracle of healing. There are copies of assets and liabilities checklists available online for those who would like to use them. As we have already said, there is no right or wrong way to do the fourth and fifth steps. Just do them. Thank you for joining me this week. I hope you have a blessed day. And remember, you are amazing. You are worth it. You deserve an incredible life. And I love you. So head out this week and complete your steps 4 and 5 before next week's episode, session 3, steps 6, 7, 8, and 9 drops. Can't wait to move forward with you on this journey. Until we meet again, lean in to get soulful. Thank you for meeting me soul to soul today on the Soulful Podcast. If this episode connected with you and you feel called to, please share it with your friends and family so they can feel the love as well. Also, don't forget to hit subscribe on your podcast player so you get notified when new episodes drop. Please leave a rating and comment so I know what's touching your soul the most and can bring you more of what you long for. If you have suggestions for topics or would like me to speak at your event, please connect with me at soulfullsobriety@gmail.com. Thank you for your love and support in helping me connect with more souls to remind them they are divine, capable, and loved. You're the best. Go out looking at the world through the lens of love.